Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, has a prior commitment, but as the director of Hazleton Betty Ford Clinic, it reminds us of all of the great works that he and his team does for our community. And in fact, the reason he's been pulling double duty is that one of his counselors has recently quit. But that also means that there's a great opportunity for a qualified counselor that wants a great job in the West LA area. So if you are interested, email your resume to M. Polacek, that's P-O-L-A-C-H-E-C-K, at hazeltonbettyford.org. And put it to the attention of counselor position. Now, if you're driving and you can't write that down, we'll put the information on our website and you can check it out later by going to answersforthefamily.com. Now, for those of you that have been listening and sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to many things that can make our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for your family. Now, our topic today is connecting in the land of dementia. And with me today as a guest co-host is international investigator and friend for over 35 years, Logan Clark. And Logan has worked a lot of elder abuse cases where the onset of dementia strikes, and unfortunately, someone close to that person chooses to exploit them rather than surrounding them with their loved ones. Logan, before we bring in our guest, I know that you were part of a documentary about Casey Kasem that aired Saturday night. For those that didn't see it, can you summarize it for us?
Hi, Alan. It was called Autopsy, Casey Kasem's Tragic Ending. If people look it up, they can just go on the internet and look up Autopsy, Casey Kasem. It was a one-hour documentary, which now documentaries are really trying to make an effect. They're either trying, you know, these type of documentaries. They want to get someone out of prison that's in prison and shouldn't be, or they want to put someone in that's not, or possibly the wrong person's in jail. And so that was the intent going into it when they came. I believe they're in London, out of London. And based on the show and the pathologist, that the forensic guy that they had do all of the work on this show, he concluded that Casey died while in the hands of Gene Kasem. And no one up to this day has said that. We've had an autopsy. We had different things, medical reports of what he died of, sepsis, but nothing actually confirming that Gene Kasem caused that. Okay, now I believe we can.
And explain to our listeners who Gene Kasem is and a little bit about your involvement in the case.
Gene Kasem was married to Casey Kasem, which everybody knows, the top 40 and top 100. It's just Casey Kasem with America's Top 100. And his wife kidnapped him from a hospice hospital and took him on a journey for 3.5 weeks that ultimately resulted in his death. And he had Lewy body dementia, which they didn't realize at first. They thought that he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And Parkinson's doesn't do anywhere near what Lewy body dementia does as far as the hallucinating and, you know, all that stuff. So when they found that out, it was, and in a lot of the elder abuse cases, that comes into play, and that's when they get them to sign papers and change their will and change their estate. And the Kasem kids the children hired me to find their father when Gene kidnapped him. And I found him in Washington State. And he had gone to they went to Vegas for 3 weeks, 3 days, and got sweets. Why they did that with a dying man, God only knows. But it was a crazy case. I got him back. I found him, got him back to the family, and he passed away, unfortunately, about 10 days later because he was in such bad shape.
Wow. Now, if there's anybody out there that is concerned that things aren't really going well with their own loved ones, or that they believe somebody's taking advantage of them, what would you recommend they do?
Well, the first thing people do in elder abuse is, especially if there's any form of dementia or senility that sets in, the first thing they do is isolate them. They isolate them from their family. If you start noticing that, if you start noticing that the new wife or the new husband, whatever, is not allowing the other family members to come around, and it's done over a slow period of time, and they just literally eliminate each one of the friends and family around them, that so that they aren't aware of what is going on and they can't interfere with it. Most of these elder abuse cases carry on over a period of a year, 2 years, 3 years. Casey Kasem was over a period of 10 years. And they have to watch out for all this secrecy. All of a sudden, with their loved one, their family member, and they're no longer allowed to find out what is going on. They're not allowed to talk to them when they're alone in the room. There's always somebody there. They're trying to keep you from getting into the wrong conversations.
Well, and I think that the book that our guests have written is geared towards those caregivers that are the ones that really do care. And I think they talk a lot about the importance of having those loved ones around them. So again, our topic today, which is connecting in the land of dementia, our guests today are Deborah Schaus and Ron Zoglin. And they are former family caregivers. They are Alzheimer's advocates, writers, and performers who have a passion for helping people find the gifts and blessings in the care partnership journey through dementia. Deborah is the author of Love in the Land of Dementia and the newly published Connecting in the Land of Dementia, which is creative activities to explore together. She is also a speaker, creative catalyst, and dementia advocate. She has written for such publications as The Washington Post, Christian Science Monitor, Reader's Digest, Women's Day, and Family Circle, to name a few. She writes a weekly column for the Kansas City Star and has been featured in more than 4 dozen chicken soup books. Ron is the owner of Brookside Antiques and Appraisers in Kansas City, Missouri. Antiques, to him, dovetail into Ron's passion for storytelling. As a professional storyteller, Ron has performed for businesses, universities, and international conferences. He is the voice on the audio tapes, Even Mystics Have Bills to Pay, and The Adventures of the Little Green Dragon. Ron feels that stories add a warmth and meaning that complement and enhance life in these technological ages. Deborah, Ron, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're just delighted to be talking with you all.
Well, and again, we're glad to have you on. And unfortunately, this is a subject that we're all seeing much more about. I mean, I don't know what is causing it. I don't know why we're seeing more. But I know that the more that we look into it, the more we find that there are more and more people being diagnosed with dementia, as well as Alzheimer's. So first of all, if you can share a little bit in regards to what the difference is. I know I was talking about this with some people at the gym a couple of days ago, and they were sort of inferring that both Alzheimer's disease and dementia were sort of the same. So I know that sometimes people will use the words interchangeably.
I'd be happy to tell you the difference. Dementia is an umbrella term. So if you think about walking into an ice cream store and you see ice cream, then Alzheimer's would be chocolate, and Logan, you mentioned Lewy body, that would be strawberry. So there's many different kinds of cognitive impairment, and they're all under the umbrella of dementia.
So you know, what are some of the other misconceptions about what it's like to connect with someone who is living with dementia versus someone who is living with Alzheimer's?
Well, I think, you know, Logan has pointed out something that's really germane to this topic, and that is isolation. And there's a natural isolation that often happens when somebody is diagnosed with any kind of cognitive impairment. Many times they lose their work, they lose their ability to drive, they lose some of their friends. And so it's a huge issue, and that's one reason we wanted to write this book. Both Ron and I have had many years of experience caring for our own family members living with dementia, and we were in there wanting to stay connected every step of the way, as are many. But it's scary for people, it's awkward, and so we see the value of keeping that connection going throughout the journey.
Now, and you mentioned keeping the connection, but I know also in the book you talk about not just keeping the connection with you and and the patient, but also as many loved ones as possible, keeping them around them. And share with us how important that you feel that is as someone who has been right there working with them.
Well, you've brought up a very important point. It's vital that we all keep as many friends and family around us, regardless of the physical, emotional, or mental changes we go through. And one of the big lessons, I think, for both Ron and I, and for me, in writing this book, is how similar we all are in what we want out of life. We all want life that has a meaning or a purpose. We want relationships that are deep and fun. We want to have activities that we can explore and learn. And that doesn't stop just because someone is living with some kind of dementia.
Now, you mentioned in your book about music and visual arts and other form of creativity, and that is so valuable in these relationships. Share a little bit about that and how beneficial that is for the person dealing with this.
Well, one of the great things that I learned from interviewing dozens of experts around the world is the power of creativity and imagination, so that even when the rational brain isn't working as well as we might like it to, creativity is still very present. And that's where these expressive art forms come in. Music, art, cooking, gardening, there's so many different ways to connect. And Logan was mentioning the power of documentaries these days. And I wanted to mention one that was really transformative for us. And it's a documentary called Alive Inside. And so I want to just tell you what that is. That is a documentary that shows a very profound program called Music and Memory. This program was started by Dan Cohen out of Brooklyn, New York. And it's simple, and yet it's transformative. And so the movie Alive Inside documents the difference that music can make with somebody who's living with dementia when you have a playlist of their favorite songs. So when you think about what are the songs this person most loves and relates to, oftentimes there's music from their early years in their life, and you put those on some kind of iPod or listening device, and you put headphones on them, they can transform. They can bring a person, quote, back to life. So you think of your stereotypical person living with dementia in a facility who may be slumped over, bored, the music transforms them. And this is shown so beautifully in this documentary.
And Logan, you were just commenting earlier in regards to the brain function. And
well, yeah, she's talking about creativity. The brain, we all know that, you know, the left-hand side of the brain operates the right-hand side of the body, right opposite the left. The right-hand side of the brain is the creative side. The left-hand side of the brain is the analytical side. The Chinese, a couple thousand years ago, I spent 10 years being raised in China. And the Chinese, thousands of years ago, came up with a thing called the five-minute drawing. And they proved a long time ago that you can actually exercise the right-hand side of your brain, the creative side of your brain, by doing this five-minute drawing. They would take students out to a location, and they sit there in a chair. They're not allowed to have a pad or a pencil or anything with them. And they stare at a scene. Let's say it's a river brook or, you know, a little waterfall, trees and stuff like that. And they sit there in a chair, nothing to jot down. They just sit and stare at it for a week. A week. They go out every day and sit there. Now the left-hand side of the brain is operating. It's all analytical. You're looking at it, partly created because you're enjoying it, but it's analytical. You're literally going, the trees are over there, the water's coming in, the shadow's coming from here. You go back to the class after a week of this, and they give you a pencil, and they say, draw what you've been looking at for a week. Draw it in 5 minutes. And what that does is it immediately, it's like changing gears. It's forcing the right-hand side of your brain to start pumping, to start working now, to create what the left-hand side of your brain has studied. This is one of the reasons that music, which is a time machine, it's the only true time machine in the world. When you hear, I was a DJ, obvious by my voice, I was a DJ, and all it took was three spins of a record, and it takes a person back to a smell, a feel, a taste, everything, instantly. Nothing else in the world will do it. A book won't do it. A movie won't do it. It takes time. A song, three bars, four bars, and you're there exactly where you were when you heard that song. So going along with what she said, there is a lot of people, when I explain this, a lot of people now, in the older days, people kind of knew what I was talking about. Now they're like, what? What? You can exercise, and you can. You can exercise just like a muscle, just like doing reps with a barbell on your right hand and not doing it on your left. Your right arm will get stronger and stronger and bigger.
And so, Deborah, well, that's what it sounds like the documentary was trying to bring out.
It does, and I'd love to, since you're talking about music, Logan, I'd love to share a very short scene from the book that Ron will read to us that really encapsulates just one way a care partner was using music in his everyday life. And then we have a story about art to illustrate your other point, Logan, that we can share. Will you set us up with that?
Sure. This is a story about a couple named David and Arla, and David was dedicated to caring for Arla at home during her dementia journey. But getting her to take a bath was becoming increasingly difficult. He simply could not coax her out of her chair and into the bathroom. He thought back on their life together, trying to figure out what could motivate her to move. And then he remembered listening to Duke Ellington's big band. Now, Arla loved the Duke, and she was always the first one out on the dance floor. So David put on one of Ellington's CDs, and as the orchestra swelled, he held out his arms. Arla smiled and stood right up, seeming to float into his embrace.
Because she was back there. She went back there.
You're right.
And he had to grin as he danced her into the bathroom to the sound of the Duke playing "Don't Get Around Much Anymore."
Oh, I know it well. Excellent story.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, there's something else that's really easy for caregivers to just weave into their everyday life, and that is singing. It's something that I did with my mom, singing familiar songs, and with Ron's mom, we also did music together. And you don't have to have a great voice or know all the words. In fact, even humming is wonderful. It helps deepen your breath, helps you connect with people. So that those musical examples are something that anybody can do in their everyday life. I wanted to go back to art for just a minute because there are some wonderful art programs for people who are living with dementia. Many Alzheimer's associations have a program called Memories in the Making. It's a water painting, watercolor painting program for people living with dementia, and they produce beautiful works of art. Also, going to look at art. And I'd love to share a quick example of how that can be transformative. Is that
please
work for
do.
You, Alan?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, this is a true story from our friend Terry Miller, who's with the Alzheimer's Association in Houston. And he, one of the members of her early onset group is a guy named Sam. He is an example of someone who was surprised to enjoy the art gallery. His wife cared for him at home and went to the care partners group. And when Terry formed this partnership with the Houston Museum of Fine Arts, she invited her early stage group to experience a tour with their care partners. But when Sam heard the invitation, he rolled his eyes and he said,
"I've never been to a museum, and I'm not about to start now."
So Terry was surprised when the next week Sam signed up for the tour.
"What made you change your mind?" "Well, my wife really wanted to go, and she does so much for me, I figured I'd do something for her."
Terry expected Sam to sit back silently, arms folded over his chest, as the docent asked, "What does this painting make you think of? And has anyone ever been in a similar setting?" But to Terry's surprise, Sam had opinions on each of the three pieces they discussed. Later, Sam told Terry,
"At first, I didn't want to go because I was worried I wouldn't have anything meaningful to contribute. But I guess you don't have to know anything about art to enjoy the museum."
What was great, Alan and Logan, is that Sam and his wife talked about the experience all the way home. Discussing these paintings opened up chances to reminisce and connect. And then the experience gave them something interesting to share with their grown children and visiting neighbors. So those are two small examples. And you don't have to have an art gallery nearby to enjoy looking at art together. It's something you can do at home. You can get books from a library. You can look online. And the trick is to asking open-ended questions, because I think sometimes people are intimidated. They don't know anything about art, but you don't need to know anything to talk about how the picture makes you feel and what it makes you think of. So those are a couple examples of things that caregivers can do right in their own homes with their loved ones, or they can do when they're visiting. And that was another reason we really wanted to share the ideas in this book, is perhaps, you know, you've experienced this. I have experienced it, where sometimes you're going to visit someone, you feel a little awkward. If your relationship is different and you're used to talking to them and maybe you can't talk quite the same way anymore, it's really nice to have some activities to take with you. And these are a couple things you can take with you and enjoy any place you are.
And one of the great things about connecting in the land of dementia, you can virtually, before a visit, open the book to virtually any page, and you'll find right there a tip to give a try, because Deborah's interviewed, 70 different experts from all over the world who've utilized these creative therapies. And one is more interesting than the next, and they all lead to quality moments.
Yeah. You know, music and the brain, there's such a major connection to it. I learned, interesting, when I was in my late 20s, I had a friend who stuttered. And he had tried everything, and, you know, classes and all kinds of stuff. And his mom played the piano. And you know the metronome that sits on the piano? The tick,
sure.
Tick. Okay, well, he used that to cure stuttering.
Wow.
And he realized, and if you think about it, it actually will work. And then he did it to other people that he met who stuttered. He would say, "I used to stutter, and I'll show you how to get over it." And we speak everything. There's so much about our life and our brain and our bodies and the way we talk. We talk in breaths. I write poetry. I publish poetry all over the world, and you read poetry. The reason poetry is broken down the way that it is, oddly on a page, not written like a paragraph, is because that's how you breathe. That's how the author wants you to breathe. A short line, a longer line, short line, a dash, one word. That's the breathing notations for you, even though you don't know that. The reader does not realize that. That's how to breathe when you're saying that. If you take that to music, you use that metronome, the same thing works for speaking. You can literally stop yourself from stuttering by listening to that tick, tick, tick. And it's all about the breathing and your talking and your breathing. Same thing as singing. Anyway, it's just amazing how music and the brain tie in together. There's so many therapeutical things you can do with music.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one of the many things that are in the book. And again, the book is called Connecting in the Land of Dementia. And we're going to take a break. But if you would like to follow along, or if you would like to look at where you may be able to get the book, you can go to the website dementiajourney.org. So stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and our guests today, Deborah Schaus and Ron Zoglin. So one of the questions is, what inspired you to write a book? I mean, it's taking on a huge job to take what you've learned and now try to put it in a book and put it out there for everybody.
Well, I was inspired because I wanted hope and concrete action for caregivers to take. That was one of my ongoing feelings when I was taking care of my mom. I often didn't know exactly what to do, and I stumbled around and figured it out. But I loved it when I had those meaningful moments of connection. And that's what it's all about, is that you want to stay connected with your loved one no matter what they're going through. And you can do that throughout your relationship if you're willing to go to where they are in the process and appreciate them as they are. And these are just handy tools and ideas to help you through that way. So that was one of the things that really inspired me to want to do this. And once I started talking to people on this subject, I really got hooked because there were so many interesting ideas. I wanted to, since Logan mentioned poetry, I just want to mention that poetry is a beautiful way to stay connected. There are several great poetic examples in the book, and again, you don't have to know anything about poetry. Gary Glasner with the Alzheimer's Poetry Project has a great website, and one of the things he does is call and response poetry. So he reads a line, so I might say, "Once upon a midnight dreary," and then I ask everybody to repeat, "Once upon a midnight dreary," and he goes through the first several verses of the poem and then talks about it. I've actually been doing this with a friend of mine who's living with dementia, who's long distance from me, and it's one of the ways we're really having fun staying connected on the phone.
Now, do you find that it it works better if you use poetry that they're already familiar with, or is it just as valuable if it's brand new poetry that they may have never heard?
That is an excellent question. I think it's great if you know some poetry they're familiar with to start out that way and then mix it up, you know, a little bit. But yes, I have been starting with poetry. We went to high school together, so I've been starting with poetry that we were invited to memorize in high school. And so she is, I know that she's heard it before, but that's a great question. But you can't really go wrong with it. And as Logan was saying, the poetry is just, it deepens your breathing and it's very soothing. Another way we have enjoyed staying connected is through cooking. And since the holidays are, you know, surrounding us, one of the things we did during our holidays when my mom could no longer, you know, really cook a meal or be in the kitchen, we moved out to the dining room table away from kind of the chaos of the kitchen, and we chopped vegetables with dull knives, and we tore lettuce. We made fruit salads. We did flower arranging. We did a lot of things so that my mom could still contribute to the meal. And I think that it's really important for all of us to still be able to make a meaningful contribution to our families and our communities. So when we were sitting down to one of these meals that mom had helped with, one of our guests said, "Oh, this is a great meal. Who helped with the meal?" And so I thanked my brother first because he was the major chef, and then I mentioned my mom and my daughters and my nephews, and mom turned to me and whispered, "Did I help?" And I said, "Yes, mom, you did help." And she said, "That's good, because I like to help." And so even though she didn't remember, she helped. She got acknowledgement. She enjoyed the helping. And it was a lovely way to kind of keep our connection going.
Well, we have a listener question that's coming in, and this one refers to someone's mother. And this one reads, "My mother has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she is beginning to lose the ability to speak. She gets so frustrated because she can't find the words. I'm wondering if any of your activities would be helpful for us as we try to interact with her. I am anxious to find less technical materials that will give us some guidance and suggested activities that are easy for all of the family to participate in." And this comes from JB in Orlando, Florida.
Alan, I might speak to that one. Going back many years to when Deborah's mother got Alzheimer's and she was losing her ability to speak, I always was looking for some way to connect with her when I went in. And her mom, prior to this, was a person who might be a bit on the more serious vein. But what I started doing was just sitting down in front of her and just looking at her. And it was just amazing that she would give me complete eye contact, and the two of us would just literally be looking at each other. And then all of a sudden a smile might come into one of our eyes, and it was infectious. And in moments, the two of us were just sitting there laughing with each other. And that was, to me, some of the strongest moments of connection that I actually remember having with Deborah's amazing, wonderful mother.
You know, I'm so glad that your listener asked that question, because I think it's a question so many of us struggle with, is now what do we do when it's really frustrating for a person to talk. And that was one reason I wanted to write this book. So we mentioned the music, the singing. Those are excellent things to do together. We mentioned looking at art together. Painting together is something lovely to do. I have a friend who's living with dementia, and what we do is I bring over some colored pens when I visit, and we take turns making a line on a shared piece of paper. So I might make an orange line, and then she might intersect it with a green. And it's like a little conversation, but without words. And then if words come up while we're making the lines, we talk about it, but there's no pressure to conduct a full conversation. That's something I've really enjoyed doing. Another thing with painting is just taking some easy paints to use and making marks on a piece of paper together. And you can even rest your mom's hand on yours and move it around. And then to see what are her hobbies and how can you adapt them so she can still do them. One of my friends who contributed to the book, Mara Batonis, had a great example about her grandfather, who loved to play cards, and he loved golf, and he loved fishing. And even when he couldn't, like, track the family card game, they figured out what is important about this game. Is it really playing the cards, or is it sitting around the table and having dip and chips and laughing and talking? And so to look at the things your mom enjoys doing and ask yourself, what is really important to your mom about gardening or quilting or whatever it is she really enjoys, and then seeing how you can help her with that. There's a term called a cognitive ramp that I really like, and Dr. Cameron Camp and Dr. Alan Powers both use this term. So you think about a ramp in replacement of stairs. So if someone is in a wheelchair, you wouldn't try to make them go up the stairs, you would direct them to the ramp. And the same is true if someone is living with dementia. You want to give them that cognitive ramp to help make their life easier and support them in living their best life.
You know, I think that makes great sense. And I love the fact that you brought up painting, because it gives them another artistic outlet to be able to do something where we don't need words. You know, the picture will be the words, and I think that's beautiful. And I want to get back to the book for just a little bit, because I know that the title of your book refers to Land of Dementia. How did you arrive at that metaphor for the book?
Well, it was one of my life lessons, Alan, where for a period of time, the early year when my mom was living with dementia, I kept trying to drag her back to my reality, and you know, it wasn't working. And so when I finally figured out, go where she is, really appreciate her where she is and as she is in the land of dementia, our relationship got much better and it deepened. And the pressure she felt from me and the pressure I felt diminished, and so we were really able to stay connected. So that's where the title came from.
And when you were talking with all of these experts, what was maybe one of the most unusual things that you learned that maybe a lot of us wouldn't have expected?
Well, one just overall thing was just how connected we all are in the way we look at life and what we want out of life, and the ideas of being reminded over and again from these different fascinating people how important purpose is and how important it is to try to empower people who are living with dementia to feel they have a sense of purpose and they are contributing. And I knew that on some level, but it was really deepened. But I thought I would share, to go back to your caller, but also to go back to the book, another surprising thing that I learned about when I was writing the book, and that was about laughter. And so do you have a minute for me to share a quick laughing story?
We sure do. In fact, if it includes laughing, that's a bonus.
Okay. So when I was searching out experts for the book, I reached out to Dr. Madan Kataria from Mumbai, India. He is the founder of Laughter Yoga. And I have to tell you, there are no yoga postures in laughter yoga. It's a breathing practice. Excuse me. So he agreed to a Skype appointment with me. And I really prepared very carefully because I was talking to an MD, and I wanted him to think I was a serious journalist on a serious mission. So you can imagine how surprised I was when I found myself giggling uncontrollably within 2 minutes of talking to him, and I want to tell you what happened. I said, Dr. Kataria, what inspired you to create Laughter Yoga? And he said...
Before I answer that question, Deborah, do you know the ha-ha chorus?
No, Dr. Kataria, I don't.
Well, it goes like this. Ha 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 ha. Sing it with me, Deborah.
And Alan and Logan, let's all sing it. And so that really introduced me to this marvelous idea of bringing more laughter into our lives. Dr. Kataria believes that laughing is a skill anyone can master, and laughter yoga is ideal for people who are living with dementia. He told me,
laughter yoga is an aerobic workout that actually helps uplift your mood within minutes by releasing endorphins from your brain cells. You often remain energized, relaxed, and in good spirits throughout the entire day. Laughter also makes our immune system stronger, plus laughing with others builds a social bond and reduces feelings of isolation.
So the thing that is so cool about this is in his research he found that fake laughter is just as important to our bodies as real laughter. And so we interviewed him, and we interviewed Carmela Carlisle from California. And one of the things she gave us was a lot of little tips for when you're ways to use laughter in everyday life. So when you're getting dressed, you know, you can say, the left foot is going into the left shoe. Or if you're driving and you're at a stoplight or a stop sign, you can decide, we're going to laugh during the stop sign, and you can start laughing. Or you're in the kitchen and you're just going to look at the clock and say, we're going to laugh for 10 seconds, and you just start laughing. And the more you laugh, the easier it is to laugh. And even if the person living with dementia doesn't instantly laugh along, they're still benefiting from hearing the sounds of laughter.
Wow. So, and being as we're in the holiday season, I think if we could get some ha-has and some ho-hos, we should all just be...
You're right!
That's right. So we have another listener question, and this one is a little different. This one reads, I have been reading that changing patterns of doing activities, and in parentheses it says, you know, so events that are small things around the house can spark brains, the synapses in our brain. It says simple things like consciously stepping off of a less dominant foot, or using your left foot instead of your right foot, or doing one activity like walking for 2 months and then switching to golfing or aerobics or yoga for two. Just mixing it up. Is there any truth to these recommendations as it relates to these patients?
That is a great question. And what I love those ideas, and I use those ideas as a way to kind of promoting creative thinking. I don't know the answer. I certainly think it probably doesn't hurt anything, but I don't know the answer to that about people living with dementia. But anybody who's caring for someone with dementia, it's really important to think about how you're going to keep your creative energy high and sparked, and those are excellent ways to do that.
Well, and it makes perfect sense. And I know we've had other guests that were brain specialists that talked about, you know, how you're establishing patterns in your brain. And one made a visual that I thought was really easy for anybody to take. And they said, consider your brain as if it was a snow-capped mountain. And every time you ski down a certain area, you're making grooves in it. And if you keep going down the same one, you're going to establish a pattern. On the other hand, if you break it up and you start going down and putting new patterns in, it is going to open your brain up to be able to do more things. So logically, again, going from some of the brain experts, I think that the person bringing up this question touches on something that could be very beneficial by just creating new brain paths that maybe haven't been exercised, which also now goes back to what Logan was saying, which is it's a muscle. Let's exercise parts of it that maybe hasn't been used as much, and we may be able to find all new things that can benefit them.
Well, that goes along with a couple of the things that Deborah and I always feel are the most valuable tools when we are dealing with people with dementia, and that is approaching everything with flexibility and openness. And that kind of flexibility, what you're describing, increasing those, making new brain patterns, would certainly increase flexibility.
It certainly makes sense. So we're just getting close. We're starting to run a little bit short of time. So now share with us one of the things that I always like to have on this show. Share with us one of your favorite success stories.
One of my favorite success stories? Well, that is a great question. I will share that with you. Ron and I have traveled all over sharing stories from first, Love in the Land of Dementia, which is the first book I wrote, and now we're starting to travel all over sharing stories from this book. But when we were sharing stories in Istanbul, Turkey, from Love in the Land of Dementia, we had a translator, and after we shared our stories, a gentleman came up to me and said, through the translator, your stories are my stories. That was a beautiful moment for me, and it just encapsulated what Ron and I have felt all during this journey of connecting with caregivers from all around the world, is that we're all on the same journey, and that the more we share our stories with each other, the richer our life will be, and the more the stigma that sometimes in our country around people living with dementia, that stigma will be reduced. And I want to invite your listeners to visit my site. I write a new blog post every week, and I always interview fascinating people and have interesting tips for caregivers, and I love to hear people's stories and ideas. So it's dementiajourney.org. And I welcome hearing from you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I also want to acknowledge and thank you for all of the positive that you're doing out there. I mean, we have things that we see in the news that are constantly focusing on whatever is negative, and you are going out there as caregivers and not only helping people yourself, but you're also spreading the word both by traveling as well as putting out the book. So again, I just want to acknowledge both of you and thank you so much for putting out the book and sharing so much positive information. And again, for everybody out there, the website, dementiajourney.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was really an honor and privilege to be with both of you.
Very much so, Alan.
All right. Well,
thank you.
And for everybody else out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, December 19th, when we are joined by Jennifer Reich, author of Calling the Shots, Why Parents Are Rejecting Vaccines. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving greater thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time that you are on Facebook, Twitter, or other social media sites, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of the latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and share them with your friends and family. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.